Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
How does Paul Thomas Anderson replicate the 1970s, specifically the San Fernando Valley? He brings in his two-time Oscar-winning costume designer, Mark Ridges. We're here with him today, and also Licorice Pizza actress Alana Haim on Crew Call. So, Alana, tell me about how you got to know Paul. I understand even before he started shooting your music videos, that he knew you and your family for quite some time.
Kind of. It's a little bit of both. I mean, in a crazy turn of events, my mother had taught him in elementary school when he was really young, like a lower school. So he was like around 5, 6, or 7, but her name was Miss Rose. It wasn't Miss Haim. And my mom, kind of the same thing, was like, oh, you know, like when we would see Paul's movies on TV, she'd be like, you know, I taught him. And we always just thought that was so crazy. My mom taught like a young PTA. And then obviously we've been huge fans of Paul's work. And we kind of always knew, we're like, God, like if we ever meet Paul, like I really do think we'd get along because he lives in the Valley and we're Valley girls and we're like very proud to be from the Valley. And so is he. I mean, I think he's the only other person that I've ever met that is just so proud to be from the Valley. And years passed. I mean, we had already done our first album and we were about to gear up for our second album. And our friend connected us, which was so crazy. Like our friend was like, yeah, Paul just asked for your email. And we were like, what? Or he gave us Paul's email. And we were just so confused. We're like, that's so crazy. It came out of the blue. And we emailed him, but we didn't tell him about my mom. And then when we met him, we finally said, you know, like my mom taught you. And it turned out that my mom was one of his favorite teachers, which was so crazy. And then our friendship kind of just blossomed from that. We got to do amazing music videos together for years. And then all of a sudden, you know, he wrote a part for me in a movie, which is really cool.
So first of all, you're sublime in this. Oh. I mean, first time, first role, you and Cooper just serious. And I know I am not alone there, you know, in saying this. How long did he have you in mind for the role? I know how he conceived it. It's inspired by Gary Getzman. He had seen, I think at a junior high, a kid going, kind of pursuing the photography assistant.
Yeah.
that was kind of like how he got the wheels in motion for a screwball comedy. But how long had he been discussing with you this role?
I mean, I heard little things here and there, but I think it really was when he kind of focused on Licorice Pizza, he kind of always had me in mind, which is so crazy. And I'm, you know, still mind blown by that. But I really do think that me and Paul, especially working on music videos, I think he loved the part of me that was very much like where and when. I was always ready to kind of jump in and do anything. And I don't think I've ever said no, you know, ever in my life. I'm always up for a new challenge and I always love trying new things. And I think he kind of saw that side of me and I fit into this world of Licorice Pizza and he kind of started with me in mind, which is amazing. And reading it, there's so much of me in the stories. And I mean, I've told Paul basically my whole life at this point. He knows like every big story that I ever have. And a lot of them were in the script when I had gotten it. So it was amazing.
Can you share one?
Well, the Shabbat scene is okay. From my life. That actually happened. It wasn't my boyfriend. It was my sister's boyfriend. but that I told Paul that story like years ago, before, you know, licorice pizza was even like a thing. I think we just told the story as like a funny thing. And I remember him calling me. I was like about to get on the plane to go somewhere. And he was like, can you send me a voice note with that story? And verbatim basically like had that whole thing in the script.
Which oh, wow. Give me another moment. What's another one?
Oh, there was a lot of things that unfortunately.
The truck. No, I'm joking.
The truck is my life. That is
yeah.
My life. No, I mean, there's a lot of, there was some really funny lines that were in the movie that unfortunately got cut. But I had a whole monologue about bat mitzvah season that was supposed to be in the movie, but then eventually got cut when Gary and Alana are walking after their first, in quotes, date. It's not really a date, but yeah, there was like a whole monologue about how I was talking about how I really wanted a boy to kiss me in a bat mitzvah. And that was another story that I had told Paul. But it's not in the movie, but that's okay.
So this is really interesting. Your character isn't necessarily based on one of Gary Getzman's girlfriends.
I mean, it's a little unclear. I feel like I got a little bit of, you know, Gary's life in there in me. I'm like an amalgamation of a lot of people. It's like a little bit of me, you know, a little bit of, I mean, Kay Lenz was Breezy and in Licorice Pizza, I'm Rainbow. And there's, you know, excerpts from that movie in this movie, but it really is just kind of a weird version of me, a little bit more frantic version, a little bit more crazy version of me. But it was great. It was so fun. It was great.
How did Paul prep you for the role? Like before he even shot one frame, did he work with you and Cooper in just going through different types of scenes, kind of getting you comfortable with the camaraderie?
Oh yeah. No, we did multiple screen tests with me and Cooper that were very, you know, daunting and eye-opening. And I think in my mind, these screen tests were like, we were stars from the beginning. And then you actually rewatch them, we were terrible. I mean, we were like stumbling through all the dialogue. We were so nervous with each other. And I think the thing that's so crazy to think about is, I mean, we were supposed to shoot this movie way earlier, and me and Cooper didn't really know each other very well. And then the pandemic happened and we had to push, you know, shooting to a later date. And during the whole pandemic, me and Cooper talked every day. We talked every day. We had the script. We would read the script out loud to each other constantly, getting more comfortable with the dialogue and just really kind of in like diving into this world of Licorice Pizza. And I'm weirdly very thankful that like we got that time to really get to know each other. So by the time that we actually had to act with each other, we really did feel like a team. And
wow.
We felt like Gary and Alana, you know, we felt like, I mean, we were basically thinking the same things. We knew we had the same language and we were way more comfortable with each other, which was great. And Cooper's the best. So it was very easy to get along with Cooper.
So Mark, I remember Paul saying in a conversation, you know, with around one of the first screenings for Licorice Pizza, he was like, I'm not going to put the kids in makeup. They're running around the San Fernando Valley in the summer. And this is supposed to be look raw and close-ups and everything. Was it the same with the wardrobe? Was it more, hey, come as you are, kids? Or no, there is a method to designing this.
It's interesting you ask that, because I think there's always kind of a hybrid of planned nonchalance, you know, we'll get the right period, but it should look kind of slept in. And can we send the guys home with their clothes so that they can put them on at home and just show up in them? You know, he's asking things like that. And sometimes we were able to do it and sometimes we weren't. But he definitely likes things to look real and slept in the same way that he doesn't want makeup or he doesn't really want hair to do too much. So yeah, the clothes always have to feel pretty real.
Now, one of my questions was going to be, well, how do you switch from 1950s haute couture, European haute couture to 1970s fashion? And then I'm like, this is your third 1970s Paul Thomas Anderson movie after Boogie Nights and Inherent Vice, which leads me to, How was this different than those previous two films?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I just try to be very specific about the year that we're dealing with, and then a lot of things fall in place. You look at films or television from 1970, and it still feels a little 60s, and there's a whiff of 70s. By the time we get to 73, it is the 70s you think of when you think of 70s. In all its polyester glory. And then by the time you get to Boogie Nights, there's a different attitude about sexuality and freedom and women's rights, and the clothes reflect that. So even if it's a matter of 3 years or 5 years, you know, I'm always trying to be really specific to time and place, so that naturally makes it different.
So as when it comes to curating all of the fashion, easy thing to do here in LA? Or are you literally just racking your head trying to find the checkered dress with the wide collar that she's wearing in the councilman's office?
It's LA makes it easier to curate things or find things because we are blessed. It's a company town. We're blessed with rental houses that have been collecting clothes for 100 years. You know, Western costumes, certainly everybody's got a collection. And so I love to go put my hands on clothes and find it. And then we'll do, sometimes you'll use that as a museum piece and copy it in our own fabric, or, you know, you'll find an incredibly fitting pair of brushed denim pants from the period, but they look 50, 60 years old. So you need to remake them. But it's an incredible treasure trove. And I think LA really makes it possible. I'd be at much disadvantage in other places if we were shooting it anywhere else.
So talk about, or both of you, Alana's sense of style. When we see her at first, she's in, and correct me on any of my descriptions here, she's in a tennis dress and kind of like, it's not an Izod, but something like a blue preppy Izod. And then as it goes on, she's in a lot of rubies, a lot of reds, a lot of purples, you know, like the purple floral dress. Can you describe, does it go with her arc, or is her fashion tailored to her arc in the film, or is her fashion just tailored to a particular instance? She dresses up when she needs to, she's comfortable, like when she's driving the truck, when she needs to be.
All right, I'm gonna start, but then I want Alana's input on this too. But yeah, I think our goal was to make a realistic type closet for this person, you know, has a certain number of pants that fit her, dresses, skirts. That first thing that she wears is kind of a uniform for the women who work for the photographer. Each of them does their own version of it. But I do think it turned out to be, and this comes from me, but I also think it could be a mindset for the character Alana, is occasion dressing, you know, because you dress up for a Seder, you know, you look nice. I remember us talking about that. Or, you know, she wants to do well at her job for the councilman. So she kind of puts on her grown up, her young adult outfit that she kind of wears too when she's going to be Gary's guardian. So, and then she wears something very uncharacteristic when she goes for an audition, like putting on a different person or selling earrings. You were selling earrings at that team fair, right?
Yeah.
And so it becomes a little more hippie looking, you know? So I think we ended up being occasion dressing, which I think was very typical at the time. There were right clothes for parts of the daytime, although it was loosening up, but I think there was still that element there. So that's what we did for Alana.
Totally. I mean, I feel like the funniest decision that we made was when I'm going to, you know, see my agent, my future agent, where I'm wearing the iconic red dress with the white collar. And that's, I think, the funniest choice that we made, because it does kind of look like a hand-me-down, kind of like I maybe got it from my siblings and then I was wearing it. It's Alana's version of looking professional for that, you know, this audition to get an agent.
Yeah.
And I look ridiculous. I mean, and that was one of the first dresses that I tried on with Mark. I remember we kind of both looked at it and were like, maybe this is too crazy. I remember looking at it like, I don't know how we're going to fit this in. And then I put it on and it was just such a walking punchline. It just looked so funny, but also randomly fit me very well. And we really just went for it. And it was the perfect dress for that part because I just look so funny and it makes everyone laugh every time they see me for the first time.
And to me, with my specifically trying to do a certain time and date, that is right from 1973. I mean, it wouldn't be 70, it wouldn't be 76. It is that moment in time. So that's why I loved it. And then we kind of remade it. I think I stole the collar and cuffs off of the original dress, and then we remade the body so that it was easier for you to
open.
The zipper was placed differently.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but we loved it so much that you loved it once, you'll love it again when we remake it so that it plays better, you know. So you know, you feel things when you're in a fitting, you feel things that are right and it's the character, and you keep it and move on.
So you were working with the specific year of 1973?
Yeah, it was a little, when we were doing it, you know, I think Paul would say 72, 73, which to me is always like, wait, I practically want a month. You got to tell me a year. And even if it was 73, you know, no one has everything up to the moment. And I think now, during editing and things, we know that it's 73 now, right? Reason I'm like, it's 73.
It's 73.
So yeah, we were doing that. We were shooting for that early time, which really jazzed me because it's so unique looking.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now, what year was Inherent Vice?
70.
Okay. And what, the axiom difference, what is it?
You know, I think there's more, because people are never up to the moment. You know, there was a lot more 1960s feelings in 1970. I love doing a transition. The Master was 1950, so there's elements of 40s there, and then you feel going into the 50s. I feel like Inherent Vice was more 60s, and you were going into the 70s. So that's the difference. I think it feels more 60s in Inherent Vice, and this one is dead on 70s.
So, Mark, how far in advance do you have all the clothes for a particular scene? Is everything like collected for the week before you shoot a particular scene, or are things getting ripped up? And my nephew is all, he works in costume design, and he's been in a situation where a director will rip up something, you know, like they'll be planning something for the week and then the director will rip something like, nope, that's not the design I'm going with. And then it's chaos, and they all have to kind of catch up with a whole new design.
Yeah, we try to avoid that
as
all possible. you know, planning changes always happen. I've been on set with Paul and Boogie Nights or Magnolia or whatever, where we'll all plan it, and he'll get to the set, and in the moment he'll be like, you know, do you have another bathing suit that we can put on Dirk that has a little more juice? Or so I'm always there. We try to plan. It usually goes very well, but you do have to be able to move right or left at the last minute. But sometimes you can plan. I knew Bradley's costume was white and we were going to use it all night. And it's very thin cotton and he had a lot of action in it and things like that. So even though our prototypes that we approved the look for were period one-offs, I turned around and made multiples copying the originals so that in the middle of the night, Paul wasn't there on Ventura Boulevard, like, could I get another shirt? You know? And then I remember when we were on Ventura Boulevard, he was like, can we rip this? Can we put some blood on it? And I was like, yeah, sure. Because I just wanted to give him that flexibility, and having worked with him for 20 some years, that's a distinct possibility. And I want to give him the freedom to be able to do what he wants to do at any time, really.
And then can you talk about your color palette? I mean, it is just, it's vibrant. It's a beautiful movie, but I'm curious, were there certain colors you didn't use, or can you discuss your range?
It's really interesting that you asked this question, because typically I do have palettes, but I felt that the actual color palette of this period is so perfect for the buoyant, fun ride that this film is. I don't think, you know, it was a very brown period and we had a lot of brown in the interiors. And so I knew we wanted to pop it up a little bit with the clothes, but that just meant choices of what we already had for certain situations. The period palette helped make it feel period and also helped the buoyancy of the script, I think.
Like, because what, you know, he had it transferred, I understand, to 70 millimeter. He shot on actual film stock. And then there was this, you know, this whole thing to make it feel like a film that you would actually see in the 70s, that with the filter and the vibrant. I'm just curious. Did he have a specific direction, like don't bring me any pale colors. Everything's got to be a full-bodied wine, something to that.
So I don't know. And what I think is so cool about him is, you know, I've come from a school of like teching down whites and things like that. And, you know, he doesn't need anything like that. He wants it to feel kind of real, the way you'll sometimes see home movies and the whites or the reds flare, or blues are always super sensitive. And I think that's part of it feeling kind of offhand and a little rugged, you know, is let's just play with the colors. I do not remember him. My own limitations is I don't love black. I don't really use black a lot in my work. But that was the only thing. We didn't really need that. If we need black, I'll use it, but I don't usually do it. And I think he was happy with the joy that the period palette brings.
The as far as the I mean, you had a million costume changes. A lot. Was that easy?
For me?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like I had a million costume changes. I mean, there were a lot of repeat outfits that we had, that brown dress. I basically lived in this brown dress with the flowers and the boots. I wore that twice. But you kind of get the sense that this brown dress is like one of those staples in Alana's closet that she'll always keep going back to, because it looks good, it feels good, it's comfortable. But it also kind of makes her seem like she's more mature. Like, I feel like that's like her mature dress. And also the Joel Wax dress was a very long sequence that we shot. And I never knew that green, you know, would look good on me. Who would have known that green would be my color? Now I wear it all the time.
Look at you. You look, I love this top on you.
I know. Green. Who would have known that green would look good on me?
I love it.
But it was, these dresses really did bring to life what was going on in the dialogue. And yeah, no, there weren't, I'm trying to think like how many There was a lot of like switching t-shirts with the same jeans. And I had this amazing pair of blue jeans that I would always be so sad when we had to wash them because they would fit so perfectly unwashed. I'd wear them for like a week and a half straight. And I remember being like, do we have to wash them? I'm like, no, there's like dirt and schmutz and everything all over them. And I would put them on again and I'd be like, oh, I had to break them in again. But yeah, no, it was a lot of using the same pieces, but in different ways. And it was great. I mean, it felt like a Valley Girls wardrobe. It was great.
Did you get to keep anything? Did you take anything home?
I really wanted those jeans. I really wanted those jeans. Did not get those jeans. The one thing that I have is this 70s blue robe with yellow and orange trim that I wear when I'm calling Brian in the bathroom. That's what I made. I got from the experience. I'm hoping at some point the polka dot bikini comes into my possession. I have a feeling that will never happen. I feel like Paul's going to keep that polka dot bikini because it's so iconic. But yeah, that was great. I loved that bikini, and I had to be in that bikini for also a very long time. It took a long time to shoot that sequence too.
Before we go, what is next for you both? Mark, I know you're working on the Fablemans.
We wrapped in October, and then I'm supposed to work with Bradley Cooper on the Leonard Bernstein biography that he's doing.
What era are we talking for the Fablemans?
That's early 50s and early 60s.
Okay. And Alana,
yes.
What's going on?
I go on tour with my siblings. That's the next thing that I do for the rest of the year. I'm touring with my siblings. And yeah, hopefully maybe I would love to work with Mark again. Mark, yes. Come on. We gotta get the band back together, Mark.
We got to get that band back together.
We will one day.
It'll happen. Yeah.
It will. It'll happen. Yeah.
Where are you playing in Los Angeles?
We're playing the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
It's insane to say it out loud that we're finally playing the Hollywood Bowl. I've never stepped foot on that stage. So I'm very excited for that.
What's your usual haunt though?
To play? I mean, my favorite venue in Los Angeles is the Troubadour. That's like, okay. It's always been that way.
Okay.
From the beginning, I've loved the Troubadour. I mean, you feel the history when you go in there. It hasn't changed. But I mean, the last big venue that we played in LA was the Greek, and that was insane.
Wow.
It was incredible.
I'm jumping to conclude all the wrong conclusions. I'm like, Palmetto at Largo, Apple.
No.
Largo. No. So, excellent. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Love seeing you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro, and our podcast series has been produced by David Janov. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.